We're going to try to take some of the things we've been learning this morning about the local church and bring it even more practically into real life to help you have some takeaways as you walk out of focus here, like 24 hours from now. Sorry about that. I want to start with Dave. Dave, I appreciated how you painted really a glorious picture of the church for us. You know, the church is the intended fulfillment of God's house. It's the fulfillment of God's kingdom purpose and the fulfillment of being light to the nations. And I appreciate how well you painted a picture of the hope and glory and goodness of the church according to the scriptures. Really helpful. But I don't know, I think some of us can struggle with, although there's a glorious picture of the church in the scriptures, at times when we look around at our church, it can feel kind of ordinary and not very special or even difficult. Maybe even some here actually struggle with church hurt. And they've had hardships in church. Could you speak to, you know, seeing the glory of the church in the scriptures, but also feeling like church looks kind of hard and painful and ordinary?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that there are a couple factors at work with someone who is kind of expectation and reality is what you're describing, right? You have this fantastic picture in one moment, and then you go to your actual church and you go, people here are sort of ordinary. Or even in Mark's session, talked about like the crowd is older and the fellowship is younger and you kind of feel like the music is more engaged, something like that. I think it's often very true. I think there are a couple of correctives that I've found to that outlook. One is that please remember that in any church you go to, the raw materials for Christians are usually worse than the raw materials for non-Christians. What I mean by that is the Bible says that God deliberately chooses the lowly and the despised and the weak of the world to bring them into his glorious kingdom.
Are you calling us lowly and despised?
Not everybody.
He is.
But,
he is.
But basically, yeah, not many of you are from noble, right? We're not really the cream of the crop. And that's a part of how God likes it, to bring glory to Jesus Christ. So the church is not supposed to be like everybody on the cover of GQ magazine spiritually, or like the where people start often is from a very broken past. And we forget that because we have the privilege of being in campus ministry or getting college degrees. Not everybody has that joy. Jesus is building a kingdom that has across the board. And sometimes that's part of where our disappointment, expectation, reality thing can come from. I think the other thing I would say is that it is also helpful for us to change our picture of glory. If you go into a church and you think, oh, this is going to be glorious, I do wonder if for many of us we have a wrong picture of that. We tend to think that means it's going to be always upbeat, it's always delightful. And there are real joyful, delightful moments of that. But it is glorious when people who would not be in the same room supernaturally are. It is glorious when a person who would ordinarily in the flesh curse God and die because they don't have much to live for, but that 90-year-old woman with cancer perseveres, walks in the door, barely makes it, and says, I'm here to serve other people, and talks to my 10-year-old. There's a glory there that we often don't have eyes for because we need to get glasses for what is actually glorious.
Mark, do you want to speak to that as well?
Yeah.
Maybe even I'll press you a little bit. What about not just disappointment with the church, but church hurt?
Yeah,
they feel like, actually, my pastors and my leaders have not really led me well, or I've been unfairly treated in this way or another, or a family member has.
Yeah, you know, and there's some church hurt that's real and needs to be addressed and dealt with. So I don't want to minimize a huge category. There's some church hurt that's traumatic and needs to be taken very seriously and addressed. For many of us, the church hurt is more relational, unmet expectations, relational disappointments. And honestly, welcome to the world, this side of glory.
Yeah.
And I love the church because the church is the place where you can work that stuff out.
Yeah.
Like in my natural family growing up, conflict, no one knew how to work out conflict. There was no common basis of it. It was either the silent treatment or a yelling match. Yeah. But in the church, you have a common basis, like we're working this out together.
Can I jump in on that, too? Because there's a principle in what you're saying, that not all hurt that happens in a church hurt.
Yeah.
That's really important. Yeah. What some people call church hurt is what the Bible calls submitting to your leaders,
Yeah.
which you're called to do.
Yeah.
but simply because you disagree is not the same thing as church hurt. There is a category right. of church leaders that have acted in an ungodly way, and that's hard to recover from. Yep. Again, we just had a couple join our church who came from a very difficult, semi-abusive situation, and they said, I don't think I'll ever be able to join a church, but God has worked in my heart. Here I am today. They've Great worked God. Through real church hurt, but yeah. sometimes we just use it to mean I'm disappointed.
Yeah, and I just think glory takes a long time to work out. Yeah,
right.
Glory's not quick. And what you said, Dave, I appreciate. Like, I think all three of us, we love the ordinariness of the church. Yeah. Like, I don't want my church family to be such that I have to be a superstar
That's right.
all the time and be on and be, like, hyped and all. That's just not where I live life.
Yeah. Right.
So I'm eager to go and just be really sad and broken and have a hard week as well as a good week and meet other people the same way. I think what I love about the church, too, the ordinariness, is there's a sense in which, since we're a spiritual family, God knits us together in a unique way. Mm-hmm. So Charles Spurgeon said the church was the most dear place on earth, I think because it had the most dear people in it. Mm. And that's not natural. Yeah. So, you know, Amber, who just graduated from Kutztown, was a member of our church. Shannon and I just realized... Hallelujah.
She's popular.
Shannon and I just realized that this past Sunday, when we weren't there, was going to be her last Sunday at our church because she's moving back to York. And as I was chatting with Amber, I don't know if you noticed, Amber, when I congratulated you and said your last Sunday, I began to tear up. Huh. 2 years ago, I didn't know Amber, really. Yeah. But now, like, she's very dear to me. Yeah. That doesn't happen out in the world. So, and that seems ordinary, but actually, I think it's really glorious. Yeah. Like, that's the glory of the church.
And it's the ordinariness that makes Jesus look great.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I've often talked to people about who have been through hard church situations, and this analogy has been helpful for me. I know of many people who have had issues with doctors in the hospital. Not many, but a number that's happened. You know what I've not found? People who've had issues with doctors in the hospital and just gave up on doctors altogether. Yeah. And the same thing's true of the church. Like, if you've been hurt by the church, and I'm sure in a room this size there are people who have had real church hurt, and probably other people who have just had disagreement. But, man, you can't give up on the church. It's the place where we find the spiritual nourishment and healing that God designed us to have.
Right.
Yeah. Can I just say, so if you're here, and church hurt is a real category for you, I would just encourage you to bring older, wiser people in on it to help you understand how to deal with it. Simply that.
Right.
The worst thing to do is just retreat and say, I don't want to talk about it. I'm never going to go there. There's no healing in that.
Yep.
So just move toward it. And again, there's different levels, but it's real. So talk to someone about it.
Yep. Mark, I appreciated in your talk just how you press the button of patience really hard and said, we really need to be patient with the church. That's a big, it's an important thing for us. I wonder, I struggle with patience. I'm probably not alone in that. In fact, my own pastor a year ago was like, Lincoln, I really would love for you to work on patience. And I was like, oh.
I don't have time for patience.
I don't have time for that. We have things we need to get done in this church. Anyway, so it really struck a chord with me. I wonder, Mark, could you speak to how would we know if we're struggling to be impatient with the church? Like, what are the lights on the dashboard? You're like, I'm not being as patient as the scriptures call me to be.
Yeah. I mean, simply in my life, it's when I think I know better than what's going on. When I'm tempted to look down on people. Like I said in the talk, I'm like, come on. Like, what is wrong with you? If there's this, like, embittered sense of self-righteousness or self-advancement, I just think that's just a lack of patience on my part. And I just need to slow down and realize God is at work in the church. You know, it's tempting to think, and Dave, you've probably seen this, it's tempting to think that most pastors in a church get their way on everything. Right. Like, we don't. And it is really good that we don't. Because we have to learn and exercise patience too. Like, not getting what we want in the way that we want, in the time that we want, is really good for our souls. It just slows us down, enables us to work out our own salvation rather than feeling like, well, I have the wisdom to work out your salvation. So come on, not you personally, but right. So, but that's how I know. If I'm more eager to work out the church's salvation than my own in response to it, then I'm being impatient.
I can always tell in some ways as a pastor, as you talk to somebody who's new or coming in the door, there's sometimes like a subtext. This goes to what you're saying. And many people, what you feel when they come is, wow, just that grill thanks. They're just thankful to be there. Yeah. They're just grateful. They say, God spoke to me through the word. Thank you. I'd love to be. There are others who the subtext is, aren't you glad I'm here?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I know how to, and it's almost alarming because they've showed up in a whole different context, a whole different stream. There's a whole agenda and aim of what that pastoral team of those elders are trying to do. And there's a little bit of a pushback already, even from their first about, I'm kind of no better than you. It's not overt, it's usually covert. And it goes against what Mark was saying, as opposed to showing up as a servant.
Yeah. Yeah. Can I add an example of that? So we've all had people come to our church and say, I'm here because of the preaching or because of the fellowship. And while it's very kind of them to say that, there's just this little yellow flag. Like, please don't come for that, because it means you're coming to get something. And we want to preach faithfully, but we're never going to measure up week after week to what you want. Just come to serve because you want to be part of this family. You want to image Jesus. So when someone comes with an agenda item, like this is what I really want, I'm like, oh boy, you're set up for disappointment. Because like, Dave, you preach great sermons. My guess is not every sermon is of the same caliber, just because you want to, we're just people.
Yeah.
So if you go for that, oh my goodness, you're going to be disappointed. But if you just go to serve and be part of it, it's better.
Here's how you serve if you go to a church, by the way. If you visit a new church and you get a chance to talk to the pastor, can I tell you what not to say and perhaps what to say?
Sure, sure.
Here's what not to say. Don't say, yeah, thank you, I enjoyed that. However, really, I mean, or actually don't even say, nice sermon, I enjoyed that. I enjoyed the service. Nice job.
Mm.
I think it's way better to say, thank you for your labors. God spoke to me today.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is embodies what you were talking about a moment ago.
I think so. Yeah, that's a good way to say it, Dave.
One of the things I wonder a little bit about, this question was given to me by a disciple maker staff who's very wise.
Oh.
And the question was this: how might disciple makers' language and expectations of discipleship present a challenge translation in the local church?
Did you write that question yourself and call yourself wise?
You did, like,
no, I
didn't.
I wouldn't do that. Well, that's a good idea, though. I'll do that next week.
To your point, so how to translate real quick?
Yeah.
How does how we do it here differ from how it's done there?
Yeah, sure.
That's actually what we address in our senior track.
Okay.
And I think the way that we're training you all, good and bad, to expect it is discipleship is someone else taking initiative with you, stopping their life to make you the focus. It's a little bit separated from life, and it's like regular, like every week.
Yeah.
Whereas in the local church, if you wait to be discipled, you will be waiting a long time. Unless we mean the preaching of the word, which is real discipleship, but one-on-one, it's just not going to happen out there. And so the model that we have here is a little bit more responsive, very individual, and separated from life. Take those three words, do the opposite. That's what it's like in the local church.
Yeah, that's right. Even the word discipleship, disciple makers, has a definition for that on purpose.
Right.
And it's a very, very powerful tool that we wield and that we mean in a campus ministry context. I have seen that word used. What you don't want to do is join a church having had the wonderful blessing of someone invest in you for years. You don't want to use that to set up a legalistic standard of righteousness in the context of a local church.
Why is no one discipling?
Why aren't people doing that for me as if that were a requirement on Christians everywhere for them to do that with you?
Right.
I have seen people do that.
Yeah.
Whereas that may happen if you are blessed and have a context and a church that has that kind of capacity and resources.
Right.
Or it may happen in groups, or the church may have a different mechanism for that, depending on where it is in the world.
Yeah.
So I think your expectations as you go in, discipleship is a broader category. Some churches might say mentoring. That could get you into trouble if they'd mean that. Or spiritual formation, you'll hear that. The preaching of the word on a Sunday is a part of discipleship, as is Sunday school. All of these things are causing us to love and obey Jesus by means of the gospel, according to his word. We wield relationships in the artificial environment of a campus and a campus ministry very, very well.
Right.
That may or may not happen in the same way in a church. It happens in our church. It happens, I think, Mark, in your church.
Mm-hmm.
I think it happens in your church more than it does in my church because we have just all these different mechanisms and programs in ours. So I think perhaps by way of expectation and vocabulary, you could just learn a different culture and vocabulary wherever you go.
Well, and it's helpful to remember, disciple makers is not the church. We all know that. It's a mission of the church, and your staff are missionaries to you, which is great. It means in many ways you get attention from them and ministry from them. That is wonderful. But then once you get out into the church, the leaders of the church, they love you, but they got to love everybody.
Right.
And there's always, like, life is happening.
And things you have to react to as well. Someone unexpectedly died this week.
Yeah.
For one of our families at our church. I got a text message on Saturday morning. So-and-so's mom. Could one of the pastors, we have several pastors in our church, could one of you drop everything and go to the hospital? If I have a discipleship set up, that and your expectation is you're the only focus of your pastor's attention, I think you're going to be disappointed.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hear you saying you just need a bigger view of what's happening in the church
that's
as
right.
part of the
especially depending on the size of the church.
Yeah. Yeah, there are many here, I think, who have come from great disciple-making cultures on campus and seen God do amazing things, people mm-hmm. coming to Christ, and you're leading Bible studies, and you're having an impact. Maybe you show up at church and you feel like people aren't really doing anything. Feels kind of passive. Maybe you're tempted to feel like people are just lukewarm here. How would you speak to a student who feels that way?
Yeah, if that's true, first of all, just check your attitude. You know, just pray for humility. Just pray that you'd be able to see the church for the eyes of Jesus rather than the eyes of your ministry priorities. That's one. And as you invest in the church, if you really feel like there's a need there and you can fill it, just graciously start to do it. Like I use Justin as the example. I think Justin, you rightfully sensed that in our church there was a need for more prayer. Now he could have just sort of complained about it and stuff, but he said, all right, let me start a prayer meeting on Sundays. I'll invite people, and it doesn't need to be plastered on the board. Like, I'll just do what I can with what I have. And I really respect you for that, Justin. So you had a vision. You didn't complain. You're like, okay, my vision doesn't have to be everybody's. Great, let me do something about it.
Yeah. So actually doing something instead of just complaining. Sure. That really helps. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think generally you just don't know the full story, and it's easy coming from a very narrow cross-section of humanity, a.k.a. college, where everybody's similar age to you, to assume you know exactly why. Be very careful of assuming you know why anyone is doing anything in a church, because there's a whole lot of backstory that goes into it. Now, I would also say it is possible that people are lukewarm. Many people have not had the blessing of seeing the riches. It's like a treasure chest when someone starts to disciple and you open the Bible and you read it together and the lights come on. Many people have not had the training you guys have. There are ordinary civilians in the world and there are Navy SEALs. If you've been in a campus ministry and been discipled for 4 years, you have a tremendous blessing.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Now, most of the population of Christendom has not had what you had. Use it in a humble way, not in a haughty way.
Yeah, and to your point, Dave, it's hard to do for others what hasn't been done for you. Not impossible, but it's hard. So if you go up to someone in the church and say, can you disciple me? And they've never been discipled. It's going to be really, really hard for them. Yeah. And by God's grace, you all have been invested in, I appreciate what you're saying, in a way that's unique. And what a blessing. So let's go as servants and not demanders or consumers. We are well positioned to serve the church and to raise up the next generation. The elder, real quick, the elder from our church that was here last week that spoke at the senior track, I remember him saying, he's like, I wish I had this when I was your age. And I'm like, yeah, it may have made a big difference, but you do.
That's really helpful from Mark, just to think through. It's tempting to view people just by what you see, like, well, maybe they appear lukewarm to me, but you don't know what they've been through. You don't know their story. They weren't blessed with the blessings you've experienced, so it helps just to come in with humility.
And you might not know their starting point
as
a Christian. Like, what if their starting point was substance abuse?
Yeah.
Or what if they were saved from that? Not everyone actually has the same beginning point of their faith. And if you get a chance to go to college, that already says something about your starting point.
Right. Mark, you mentioned earlier about getting discipled. Can we speak a little bit to that? What would it look like for someone to get discipled in a church? Maybe you're younger in your faith here, and you're like, I want to be a part of a church and actually grow. How can I, you're telling me I can't go up to somebody and say, hey, I have this definition of discipleship. Can you do this for me?
Yeah.
If you do that, you're going to look weird, right?
Yeah.
What should you do?
Yeah. So instead of expecting someone to stop their life to invest in you, think about joining into their life and then gleaning from them.
Yeah, say more about that. That's good.
Yeah, it's like what I said. If you see a dad, a young dad with kids, and say, hey, I'd love to spend time with you this weekend. Are you doing some yard work? And so, could I join in on what you're doing? And then you ask them some questions first. I always start with, what's your story? And then you start to glean wisdom from that. So rather than saying, can you disciple me? In other words, can you stop your life? And then we meet at Starbucks for an hour at my timing. Yeah, just enter into their life with them. That's the best way to do it.
There was a single guy at our church years ago who was looking for someone to invest in them. But he felt kind of like, well, I'm single, and they have all these families at church. And I tell you what he did. He felt like, well, it would be odd for me to just host, because I didn't really have a home. Mm. So he just called families, this one particular family, and said, hey, I would love to provide dinner for your family. And he bought a bunch of pizza and showed up to this family's house.
So
and
great.
Gave them all pizza and said, I'm just wanting to spend time with you. And he went into their world.
Right.
I thought that was remarkable. He's one of the most respected men at our
church. And to add detail to that, maybe in terms of the principle, you may feel like that's an awkward thing to do. I can almost guarantee you it will not be awkward for the receiving.
Yeah.
Like if you said to a young family at your church or a young couple, like, I'd really like to get to know you. Could I bring a pizza over some night this week and just get to know you? Right. Oh, no. I'd be like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, make sure it's sausage. We're good. Yeah. You know? Yeah.
For pepperoni, but that's all right. That's really helpful. One of the things I hear you saying is that as college students or soon-to-be college graduates, the unique resource you have is time. You know what the unique resource most people in your church do not have?
Time.
Right. Time. Yeah. So use your time to move into their world. And when you're in their world, don't maybe expect them to say, hey, Mark, I got this heart issue I see in you. I really want to speak into it. That's probably not going to happen, at least for a while. Mm-hmm. But what might happen is you just see the way they're living and they're discipling their kids and loving their spouse. And you can catch what they're doing and learn that way. More is caught than taught.
Right.
And that's kind of how a lot of discipleship works in the church.
Yeah, entering into life with people. You know, we often talk about life on life, and that's the goal. On campus, it sadly is often meeting on meeting. That's not wrong. That's where we're at. But in the local church, it really can be life on life. You just enter into life with people.
Can I throw a wrench into the mix?
Who's going to stop you?
You're in charge.
Well, you are. You could do that.
So at our church, we actually have something called church membership. And we insist on that before people have substantive leadership or serve anywhere.
Wait, did you use the M word?
Yes. Membership. And it's not marriage. It's membership. That's a different M word.
We need to talk about membership.
Go ahead.
Go. You want me to?
Yeah.
Become a member. You expand. Go.
Well, we often think about membership in a church in the way we think about membership at a gym. Ooh. Like I pay dues, I go when I feel like it's there to serve me, and I really feel guilty because I don't go as much as I should,
it's
and I'm not as in shape.
Right now.
Yeah. Whereas the word membership, I'm not using it in that way by loose affiliation, like here's my Costco card. No, I'm using it in terms of the opposite of which is dismember, which is to be severed from a body. And the scriptures talk about making explicit what is true of you spiritually, which is to actually choose to identify explicitly and under the authority of a local congregation of leaders. That's how I'm using the word membership. And in our context, it's a part of our discipleship. Is we don't have people, there's a limit to how much you're going to be able to be discipled if you don't actually commit.
Yeah.
We live in a culture that likes to consume but not commit.
Yeah.
We insist on membership before people are allowed to serve different places. In other words, they commit to be a part of the body. Even if they're there for a short amount of time, it's a part of how we do discipleship, is that membership is a part of that process.
Yeah. And I would say, you know, at your off stage, please join a church. Now, for many college students, like, well, I don't know where I'm going to be in a year.
That's fine.
Or in 6 months. I don't care.
Yeah.
Like, join the church then. So, in other words, I would rather have, if you're coming to my church, I'd rather have you say, I can only be here for 6 months, and I don't know where I'm going to be after that. I'm like, great. Then we'll take you for 6 months, and then we'll transition to the next season. In some ways, I don't know where I'm going to be in 6 months. None of us do. Like, the Lord's sovereign. So let's honor him in the season before us. But a lot of people put off membership, sometimes because they're unsure of the church, but oftentimes because they're unsure about the future.
Right.
And we're all a little bit unsure about the future, so we obey what we know now. Right. And God says, don't forsake the gathering together. It's hard to shepherd people when you don't know who the sheep are.
That's right.
Whether they're going to be there or not.
Yeah, now some churches, I want to make explicit, don't have a formal membership.
Right.
I think that's kind of a little odd to me as a pastor if you don't do that, because right. the call on pastors and elders is right. to shepherd the flock of God that is among you, to keep watch over souls. And it's just, if there's no membership, that I don't know who I'm keeping watch over, frankly.
Yeah.
Is it just any dude who walks in the back? Am I supposed to keep watch over them? Or who are they supposed to submit to? So the membership discussion is often like a point of disagreement among Christians. I actually would amp it up and double down on saying, if you don't become a member of a church, then you can't obey the New Testament. Because the New Testament says, bear with one another, love one another, submit to one another. Yeah. Well, if you're not a member, if you're not committed anywhere, then you don't have to submit to anybody.
Right, right.
Right? You just leave. Yeah. Or you don't actually have to bear with that kind of thing when they rub you the wrong way. But commitment is a part of obedience according to the New Testament. If you don't do that, then I don't think you have the capacity to obey what the Bible says.
Well, and it's the model that works in every other area of our culture. So let's say you're at Shippensburg. You just can't show up for classes and decide to move your stuff right. into a residence hall. Like, you have to apply. You have to join.
Right.
An authority has to
enrollment.
Say, yes,
right.
you're a student. Yeah. Here's your card.
And there are rules.
Yeah, there are rules. In other words, it helps to define who's inside and who's outside so that we know how to deal with people. And it's the same in the church. Oftentimes people will say, well, show me the verse. And what you're saying is, I'll just show you the Bible.
Right.
So the Bible always talks about a covenant community that is set apart. I often use the example, I used it last week, that if you're a golfer and if you read the USGA rule book about golf, nowhere does it say that you have to be a human being to play golf. But of course you have to be a human being. It's an assumption that's just bred into it. So the Bible doesn't say, thou shalt be a member of a church, because it's just part of the warp and woof of everything that's going on from beginning to end.
The way to say that, another fancy way, is that there are some things in the Bible that we believe because they're explicitly stated. There are many things in the Bible that Christians must believe by good and necessary consequence.
Yeah.
One of those things is the Trinity.
Right.
There's no verse on the Trinity. And I think membership functions in a similar way. Mark, let me ask you a question. So
sure.
I think another thing that keeps people out of membership is that they don't know where they're going to be. Here's another one. Do you have to agree with everything in a church before you become a member?
Well, you have to agree with some things,
right.
but not with everything, because I don't agree with everything in my church. Not that everything's I just don't get my way on everything.
That's right.
But the main things, sure. So if Jesus Christ is center, and if the word is faithfully preached, and the gospel is not only proclaimed and lived out, and the sacraments are being administered, there you go. You can join the church. Let me tell you what helped Shannon and I many years into church life that helped me. I looked at our church, and I'm like, someday, if the Lord would take me, would I want this church to help parent my kids? That was so helpful, because it took theological categories, which were real, and it brought it down to actual life a little bit. Yeah.
There's, in a way, you're saying there's no such thing as 100% church.
No.
Do you know what I mean by that? Where you're like, everything, I'm just 100% in on everything. I don't think anyone's like that at our church. I'm not that way about myself. I don't 100% agree with everything I do, but there's this expectation that once I find that, check all the boxes, then I can really commit because I'm serious. And mm-hmm. you're saying, no.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
One of the questions I wanted to ask you guys is how to know if you're in a church that's healthy and good and you should invest more, or how to know if you might be in a church that's not the best place for you spiritually. Sounds like one of the things you're saying is, if there's
not much of a conception of membership, that would be something that you might want to consider.
Yeah, and I want to be careful here. I do know churches approach that. Some people have membership. They're just more informal about it. I'm not insisting on a particular way to do that. Membership to me is a factor of whether or not the elders take seriously that their job is to keep watch over and shepherd the flock of God.
Yeah.
Membership is often a signal, we take this seriously because we are going to take the time to write your name on a membership roll. Mm-hmm. We take it seriously. So I would say membership is important to me. I always say at our church, you know, as you go, you don't want to ever leave a church service and get the impression that the pastor is great or this church is awesome. Aren't we so great? Should not be the message. Yeah. But we should have this joyful but serious, exalted vision of God.
Yeah.
And there's a lot that happens outside of a formal corporate worship gathering. There's a lot that happens. In a worship gathering, for instance, you should be reading the Bible. You should be praying the Bible. Hmm. You should sing the Bible. You should preach the Bible. You should talk about the Bible. And that gives the earnest, joyful, serious dynamic that I think Christ is exalted and he is the center point of our worship, not us.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's one side.
So membership and the Bible are two things you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah, and to add to that, in my mind, there are certainly red flags, like if they deny the Bible. My guess is we're good on the red flags. There are little yellow flags that catch my attention. So if during the singing part of the church service, if you can't hear yourself, but it's all about what's happening on stage, it's just a yellow flag. Like, I so much appreciate Allie and the team, how they lead us. They're leading us, but they're not dominating us. Mm. This isn't a show.
Yeah.
Like every time we sing, I can, sometimes to my detriment, hear myself. But it's good. They're to lead us in corporate singing. So a yellow flag is when that's not happening. Another yellow flag is if during a sermon you find out more about the pastor than you do about the Bible. That's really, like, it doesn't mean, like I told my little story about my seasons. Hopefully that's not what I left you with. But sometimes in churches, the personality of the pastor or his story becomes the dominant thing. That's a yellow flag. I always think after church, so did I learn more about the word and did it equip me to love and serve other people more?
Right.
If that happens, it's moving in a good direction.
I'd like to take that even to another floor, if that's okay. Just to be explicit, we live in a culture that tries to grow churches with entertainment.
Yeah.
I just need to be clear about that to everybody listening, that what you could call worshiptainment is a phenomenon in churches, and I think it is wrong.
Yeah.
Because you are not the audience of worship, God is. It kind of doesn't matter if you enjoyed the service. It's whether or not it is doxological or God glorifying, or if this brings praise, honor, and glory to the name of Jesus. Ooh, Father, Son, Holy Spirit, it kind of matters what they think. And God has prescribed what that should be. And so I think just the worshiptainment is often I don't know what color flag, chartreuse, whatever, of a danger, which is putting me at the center point of a Sunday gathering. And I think that's dangerous to do. Yeah. Over time as well, that will do...
How do you know if your church is a worshiptainment type church?
Well, Mark gave some as well. I think, for instance, is it a congregational singing?
Yeah, that's right.
Or is it, these are the worshipers and we can't hear ourselves? At our church, for example, we have a contingent of children who have special needs.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, one of the things that ministers to my soul the most is sitting near them and hearing them worship, hearing their singing, which is not professional at all. As a matter of fact, half the time it's off key. But I usually have tears in my eyes before I get up to preach because I hear loud and earnest and joyful song from the lips of people who can't wait for Jesus to come back because they get resurrected
bodies.
That's
right. Yeah, that's really helpful. And I think, too, another yellow flag is when a church feels inward focused rather than outward facing. Inward focus can be a couple ways. Maybe it's just where it's where we all gather in our little huddle to recover and then to get ready for the week when we're going to huddle again. I often see this, and I really try to avoid this, when preaching becomes us versus them.
Hmm. Yeah.
like the bad guys are out here, but gosh darn it, the good guys are in here. You know, I'm like, really? What's wrong with the world? I'm wrong with the world, okay? Mm-hmm. I need to start with me. And if there's a sense that the church is gathered together, I think you hit this well, Dave, to go out and to reach the nations. Like everyone goes, go out, come in to go out, come in to go out. And you can start to sense that in a church.
Yeah, and we're not insisting on this is not a stylistic conversation. Mm-mm. I think it is a substantive conversation of who is the focus. Is it God and obedience to him that causes us to live holy, gather, and then go reach the world? I think that even the content of the words sung, I appreciate how our musicians have led us.
Yep.
Yeah. That the aim is us doing this together as a corporate worship, as a corpus, which means body. And I think that a question of who is the focus of it more than the stylistic or the accents of the service.
Yeah. And I would say, too, a thought is, a couple of you have asked me about this. What about sermons or pastors that preach topically through topics rather than expositionally through books of the Bible? Just so you know, I think there's freedom. My preference, I think yours, Dave, is expositionally preach it through because it teaches us to think how God thinks rather than relying on the creativity of the pastor to come up with the topic of the season and put it all together. But I think behind that, you need to think, what is driving the preaching? Is it the clear exposition of God's word, or is it an agenda? And it might be a good agenda, but an agenda to communicate some stuff to the church. Like this week in Ephesians, clearly we're doing a topic, but we're doing it expositionally. I don't know about you all, I understand Ephesians more this week, but I also understand the topic that we're after.
Yeah.
You got a thought?
Yeah, I just want to begin to wrap us up. The last couple of questions. I came, most of you don't know this, to Disciple Makers because of Mark's church. Because I have family in Mark's church, and a student happened to be visiting. My uncle said, you should go get my nephew Lincoln. True story. And we got him. And we got him, yeah. I'm still here, 16 years
still
later.
Still here.
You can't get rid of me. But one of the things I've seen, Mark, that you and Shannon have done over 16 years is help a good church move to be more of a disciple-making church. What things have you done that have worked well, and what mistakes have you made in that process?
Oh, man. Well, the mistakes are long, but mostly on my part, not Shannon's. But the mistakes I made was so much what I talked about earlier, just being impatient and saying, my agenda is right and it's good and I need to push this through. I wish looking back I had been more patient, just tried to understand people and shepherd people. I think too, and maybe some of you think this way, I used to think that change happens by implementing programs, but it doesn't. It comes by investing in people. So the way that our church changed to be more, I think, intentional of Bible study and discipleship, we just started doing Bible study with people. And we just started investing in people. And then the flywheel just slowly begins to turn. It takes years. But I think, just because it takes years, here's a sense, it's deeper and stronger because of that. Mm. The roots are deeper now.
Yeah. So different from a campus fellowship. Well, you might build it a disciple-making culture, and a couple years later, it might be hard to keep it.
Yeah.
In a church, if you're able to build it deeper, the roots deeper, then it lasts for longer.
Yeah. Well, on campus, you're graduating, quote-unquote, a quarter of your fellowship every year. You're not in the local church. So there's the opportunity to build long and strong and deep there.
Dave, can you speak to building a disciple-making culture at your church?
Yeah, I would. I don't have a whole lot to add to what Mark said. There is a time component, which it's just sowing.
Yep.
It's also not just me. I think part of one of the key components of that is training and elders.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So I think that's what Mark has done a particularly good job of. I remember Mark and I talking about it. One of his priorities when he got there was to kind of think about how he could train up his team of elders to be co-laborers. Mm. I just saw one of his elders the other day who said, "I spend most of my time just hanging out with young men." And I thought, I remember when Mark was praying for this. Right?
Praise God.
Very similarly, I try to find means to train the elders at our church. I have regular conversations about that, about what it means to take initiative with things like hospitality and spending time with younger people.
That's right.
The best word, I think, is patience and persistence over the long haul.
Yeah.
down. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Dave. In a couple of minutes here, after this last question, you guys are going to go into small groups with three or four people sitting next to you and talk about what your takeaway is for your summer and how you can be involved in the local church, how you could perhaps be more discipled or step into discipleship more. So we're going to do that in a minute. But I want to ask these guys one more question. What has you encouraged about your local church? Maybe stories or examples particularly that are just refreshing and encouraging to you.
Recently, and the staff know this, a 93-year-old woman who's been a churchgoer most of her years came up to me between Sunday school and the morning worship service, and she grabbed my hand. She said, "Pastor Mark, can I talk to you for a moment?" I'm like, "Sure." She's like, "I so much appreciate the word being preached. I need to tell you this. I recently became a Christian."
Wow.
And I'm like, I won't use her name. You've been going to church for a long time. And by looking at her, she's just the sweetest little thing, you know? But she said, I think I knew a lot about Christianity. I just didn't know Jesus. Wow. And then, you know, every week as, and it's not my preaching or yours, it's just Christ is lifted up through his word. And he says, when I'm lifted up, I'll draw all people to myself. Mm-hmm. And the fact that through the faithful opening of the scripture, preaching, singing about the gospel, that this 93-year-old woman is now assured of eternity. Mm-hmm. I love your church, O Lord, you know. So that's the story.
Yeah. I'm going to swing it to the other side in terms of children. I think that's one of the things that has me incredibly encouraged, is an eagerness, even in our littlest of kids, is really encouraging at church. There is an 80-year-old brother at our church, hard to get around. I wouldn't call him disabled, but he can't sit in the main church space. He sits out back in like the foyer area of our church on a couch. So he listens to the sermons that way. And he said to me the other day, "Dave, I just had the most remarkable experience at church." And here I was thinking, it's going to be the sermon, right? Tell me what about the sermon changed your life. Yeah, well. And he said, an 8-year-old boy just came up to me and said, "Hi, Mr. So-and-so. How are you doing? I'd love to hear about your week." And he said, "You have no idea. That just does not happen." He said, people are just ordinarily, you know this, very, very into themselves. They love talking about themselves. But there is, I look out, and I, even before I open my mouth to preach, I smile looking out at a group of people and realize, man, Jesus must be alive and on the throne.
Right.
Because look at that 90-year-old man giving out his little drawings to that group of 8-year-old boys.
Yeah.
Look at a woman who is a widow, who barely made it to church, being hugged by that 20-something-year-old single man.
That's right.
And there's something very powerful about that, so much that when unbelievers come, they're creeped out in a good way.
what does that mean?
I mean, before the sermon even starts, they feel like this is a colony of heaven on earth. We got sinners, to be sure, but there is still a vibrancy and an undeniable work of the Spirit when you see, right, newborns to 90 is how you said it?
Yeah.
When you see that happening and a palpable feeling of the bride of Christ making herself ready. I'm incredibly encouraged by that. And it's happening across the world.
Can I mention an image that just is really powerful? We've talked about it. So think about when they want to put in a new housing development. They just sort of blow down all the trees and everything. And then they put up a model home. And as they're putting it together, people who want to buy a house in that neighborhood, they can't see their house yet. All they can see is the model home. So they tour the model home, and they make an offer on an unseen house based on what they begin to see there. I like to think of the local church as a model home for heaven. Like, nobody can see heaven yet. But God, in our communities, has set up little model homes. It's called churches. And those churches are still under construction, for sure. But people should be able to go in and say, "Huh, I think this might be a little bit like what heaven is going to be like. I want to join into this." I love that image.
Thanks, Mark.
Sure.
Thank you guys for sharing. I don't know about you guys. I am very encouraged just hearing how God's at work in your churches. And even like there's hardships and difficulties, and we could share more off stage too. But just overall, God is really at work in his church.
Amen.
And man, where else would we rather be?
Let's do it.
Here's what I want you to do over the next 9 to 10 minutes is in groups of 4 or 5, talk with the people around you or go in the back and talk about how you can be involved more in your local church, how you could receive discipleship, or how you could, and how you could
serve.
Disciple.
Serve.
How you could serve, excuse me.
Serve.
How you could serve in your church. And at 12:06, Caleb's going to dismiss us to what's next.
Good enough. Thanks, everyone. Thank you.